tell us about Church World Service. What is it? What work do you do in the Triangle?
Sure. Our Durham office, the one that we represent today, is a refugee resettlement office. So we work with people who are coming to the U.S. as invited immigrants, as people with refugee status, to help them get started building new lives here. So many of those people have been persecuted because of their political beliefs or their religious beliefs, or they are fleeing some sort of civil war or conflict in their home countries. They don't have a place to go to be able to work and live there legally and have their children go to school and really sort of exercise sort of the basic human right to opportunity that most of us think of as the foundation of our lives. So they're invited to come to the U.S. as immigrants, and they get a little help from refugee resettlement agencies when they get here.
Where do refugees come from?
They can come from anywhere, but most of the refugees that we've resettled in the last year come from Somalia. So Mukhtar is a refugee formerly from Somalia. The Democratic Republic of Congo, Sony, is from the DRC. Also Iraq, Eritrea, Ethiopia, Burma, Cuba, a number of other countries.
How many refugees are there in the Triangle that you know?
Yeah, what we know is we resettle somewhere about 1,000 refugees a year into the Triangle area. Many of those people stay, some people move away, and then some people move in from other areas.
So speaking with Ellen Andrews, you just heard her, we got Sajal Nasrallah from Church World Service, Mukhtar and Sony as well. And there's been so much talk about the process of getting refugee status and making it to the United States. And there's been so much talk in the media from people who are concerned that the process is too fast, there's not enough vetting, we need more. So I want to talk about the process of actually getting accepted as a refugee and receiving asylum and coming to the United States. Mukhtar and Sony, both of you have gone through that process. What is your story? What is that process like? Mukhtar?
Thank you very much. Really, there's the refugee, they have a problem in the place they are living, in the camp. So that I myself, I'm living in 20 years in the refugee camp in Kenya. So that's at the end of the 1995 up to March last year, so that I come in Durham, in USA, Durham. Mm. So when I talk to the little bit about the background in the refugee or of by the refugee, you know, the refugee, they are living there, a lot of problems. The social shortage water, no bees, no enough shelter, no food, no medicine, there are a lot of problems. So even in Kenya, there's a two biggest camp in the world, and the biggest camp in the Africa called to Dadaab refugee camp. Mm-hmm. There's living refugee, maybe the individually, I think the 500,000 refugee. Most of them, they are Somali refugee, and but there is a many different nationality that they're speaking a different language and different culture. So that even the camp I came from is the Kakuma refugee camp. There's the West Kenya. Bordering between Kenya, Ethiopia, Sudan, and Uganda. Mm-hmm. And really, there's the refugee life in there, the individuals, they are in, I think, 135 individually, leaving the 13 nationality coming for the country near the in Kenya. Mm-hmm. So that's, there's no safe place. There's some gunmen attack the innocent people and killing and raping the small daughters. So, and even for those that people living in the camp, for those they are living in, start 1991 up to now, they are living in the camp. And they have expected to come in USA one day to come and to start to build new life in the United States. Because, you know, when United States is the government, that's not discrimination, religion, color, anything about the humanity. There's no any difference. So for that case, even there's no any hope in the place they are living, because you are refugee. So someone is a refugee, as you say, is a very poor person, because he come from his country and he's living another country, so that he need to manage things like to get a bees. So even there's no bees attacking, something like that. So that, you know, some people, they are in 1991, 92, there's some children was born in that camp and they grow up and they learn it. So now they are finished. Sometimes they cannot marry mm-hmm. because they are afraid. They don't have any economic to marry, something like that. Even some people, they're in the process. They get the process opportunity for the American government. So when you are start to the process, even you are a young man or you are young lady, the parent cannot accept to marry, because they are afraid bending. Mm-hmm. If you married to bring another wife, you say I married this woman, so I want to join with her, so you will be bending. Because some people, you are some my closely friend that we are living together in there. They finish all the process in 2008. Until now, they are pending. This, they want help. So all these things I'm talking about is affected. The executive order come from the president of Donald Trump. Mm. That's affecting that innocent people living in long time in the camp, and that they are living to get opportunity to come here and to build the future. So that's affecting the people. So the refugee, they are innocent people. Their people need, and the people need to help the assisting the government of the United States and the people of the United States. That's what they need, that people. So they did not need to bring another problem that to hopeless. If they hear like this executive, when they hear, they become hopeless, that people. Mm-hmm. Because they are contacting us, because we are living in a long time. I have many friends there. So that people, even they are contacting to us there. So that's very affected the innocent people living long time and hoping to come in one day in the United States of America.
How long did it take you between applying for refugee status in the U.S. and actually arriving in Durham?
Yeah, really, I started my first opportunity. I get the process is 30 October 2007 until 2013. I'm bending, waiting for in UNHCR. So I'm waiting that a long time. It takes, I think, that's 9 years old. So after that, they renewed to start my process in 2013. Up till 2016, the process is going, the process is going to slowly. Mm-hmm. It's not fast, so it takes time. So the doing the DHS, doing the clearance for your security, for your health, something like that. So it takes time.
So it's 9 years between first applying and actually arriving. Sony, let me turn to you. You're a refugee from the DRC. Tell us about your story, how you got to this place.
a little bit about my story. As you mentioned, I'm a refugee from DRC. Mm-hmm. And the question of process to come here depends with the country, especially in Africa. They have installation, which is in three steps. When you cross your country to another country, they give you asylum. Either they wait for a country to have a peace so that you can be back. According to some countries, they have other law where you can stay there and get their citizenship and stay there. And other, another option is resettlement, get a country that can take you to stay there. Mm-hmm. Some of the country, it's well known that they have no hope of getting peace. Those people, they come and they stay there as they wait their process to come, either US or somewhere in the other countries that takes refugees, which takes a couple of years, depending with the case. But before you get here, as my friend Mukhtar mentioned, the case is really sensitive. When they have any question, instead of give you another appointment to come back and figure out what the question is or the problem is. They just put your case aside, which takes several years for you to call you back, to come back to answer a simple question. Mm-hmm. Like if you get the child, for you to add your own child when you have the full document, birth certificate, all the required paper, it takes several years. For you to get to add your spouse to a case, it takes several years. All those cases, because of the case is really sensitive, they really want to make sure you are the one they are working and you are the one who have been cleared. And for you to come here, we pass through the process, the screenings. There's a big number who started resettlement to come here. Some of them, they get rejected. Other people, they get through here, which takes several years. Mine, I started in 2010, and I get here 2013.
Wow. What are the screenings like?
They ask you all the story. Why did you leave your country? Do you plan to go back? What's your own personal problem? Forget about what's going on in the country. Why did you run here? Mm-hmm. And some of those questions including some people, even if those country who can let you stay there, which is close to the border, we still have other people from the country, the government or other rebel people still come to attack all those camps. So for you to get opportunity to come, you really appreciate, and they make sure they do all the screenings, fingerprint. They have a database, they contact the other UNHCR in the country, they make sure you never commit any crime before you come here.
Mm-hmm. So it's a long process, and we're speaking with Sony and Mukhtar again, refugees from the DRC and Somalia, respectively. We've also got Ellen Andrews and Sajal Nasrallah here in the studio from Church World Service, and I want to turn it back to the two of you and ask, what are the common sort of misbeliefs or false beliefs that people have when it comes to refugees, when it comes to sort of the issue of immigration in general? What do people need to know that people don't know, or what should people not believe that people commonly believe?
Yeah, I mean, certainly the issue of refugee vetting is something that we've seen sort of misunderstood or misportrayed over and over again. Many of the things that Sony and Mukhtar have said just now they're describing different factors of this very, very complicated and strenuous vetting procedure that refugees go through ahead of their arrival here. Refugee resettlement in the United States is an orderly process where refugees go through a series of different application steps, including about, I think it's 17 or 18 layers of security screenings before they're ever allowed to board a plane and arrive here. When they do arrive, those arrivals are carefully orchestrated between the State Department, private nonprofits, and the local offices like ours of those private nonprofits to meet those people at the airport and make sure that they have everything they need to get on their feet and be self-sufficient here very quickly. Mm-hmm. It's not a situation where people are pouring in unchecked through the borders. It looks nothing like that. And that's something that we see. We really want to kind of address those misconceptions and encourage people to reach out to us if they'd like more information about that.
Sajal?
Yeah, and you know, it's important also to remind ourselves about who a refugee is. And Ellen mentioned this, you know, as well. But when you asked refugees, where do they come from? I mean, refugees come from all over, anywhere, mm-hmm. and from any political context. And those who are determined to be refugees, again, through this system, do not include all refugees, even. And we've seen that through, you know, how, you know, the way that the media kind of focuses on a particular nationality or person who's conceived to be a refugee, which also informs the way people describe refugee resettlement as a homeland security issue. And we want to make sure that's really clear, is that this is not a threat to the integrity of this nation, its safety or security by any means. If anything, it is it is a testament to really what the United States, as well as other Western countries, have had to offer in terms of their uplifting of the human right to movement and freedom from persecution. I think this is that's probably one of the gravest concerns that I think we're seeing now, is that having to defend people who are deeply innocent and deeply entitled to opportunity and life and different means of becoming in this world, being deprived of the opportunity, even the limited opportunity that is given by refugee resettlement. Mm. So
I think it's so important, the work that all four of you are doing to share your stories and to get that message out there, because I was at the rally that you held in downtown Durham a couple of weeks ago, when the day the executive order came down from Donald Trump, the initial executive order, and it was just one incredibly powerful story after another from people from the DRC and Somalia and Central African Republic and El Salvador and all over the world, and people who are coming here because they're fleeing oppression, they're fleeing persecution, they're fleeing violence and war and danger and bloodshed, and they're coming here because there's opportunity here. This ought to be a good place or a better place. And I think it's so important to continue to tell that story. So thank you all for the work that you do. Speaking again with Alan and Sajal and Mukhtar and Sony, I've got to let you go here in a few minutes, but what do you want to leave people with? What do you think that people ought to know or ought to think about? Or what can people do first and foremost to help?
Yeah, well, the first thing that we hope from anybody who's listening is that if they do have any concerns or want to know more about refugee resettlement, please reach out to us. This is, it's not new. The U.S. has been resettling refugees since the end of World War II. It's one of our most sacred and time-honored traditions. Opening our doors to people who have no other options, and giving them the opportunity to build a new life here. I one time heard somebody say that resettling refugees is as American as apple pie and baseball. And we really believe that. And we invite anyone who'd like more information about it just to reach out to us. They can reach out to us through our website. It's www.cwsrdu.org. We do presentations, information sessions. We regularly work with a host of volunteers on different issues, and we also have some information on our website about volunteering. We invite people to get involved and get to know our team and the clients that we serve more deeply if they're interested in doing so.
CWSRDU.com?
.org.
CWSRDU.org. Go there and find out more about Church World Service, find out more about this issue, find out more about what you can do to help. And again, this is one of the most important things that we can do for each other, and one of the most important things that we need to be talking about right now. Alan, Sajal, Mukhtar, Sony, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you so much for having us.